Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of South Florida, Southwest Florida, to be specific. Kind of dark and dreary right now, looking like we're getting ready for another one of those afternoon storms coming up. Hear the thunder in the background, and I often wonder if you can hear it. The studio is very well insulated, but it's noisy. Anyway, welcome to the show. As you may notice, as I speak to you today, I kind of have a cold, can't get rid of it, so I may sound just a little bit different today. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to call in and spice up the show a bit, if you've got anything to say, be ye on the right or the left, we'd love to hear from you, maybe even somebody right straight down the middle. As you well know, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, I am a Democrat. And I am liberal, middle of the road on some fiscal policies and all that, but I'm also liberal. I believe in choice. I believe in the government being there to help the people when it's necessary. I believe that collectively we can all help each other on a lot of things. And I will never back down from that. I am not politically correct. I have no intentions of being so. The opinions expressed on this program are mine, and if they also mirror some of yours, why, that's good. I often get criticized for being a little bit too forthright with people, and I often get emails saying you're dead wrong on this or dead wrong on that. That's okay. I don't mind. I've got thick skin. Actually, I've developed thick skin. I never used to have thick skin, but I've developed it here in the past few years, and it's kind of required if you do what I do here on the Guy James Show. But welcome to the show. One of the first things I wanted to mention today is I want to thank Wes Clark. I want to thank General Wesley Clark for skipping all the bullshit and telling it like it is. And would that more people would do that. Would that Barack Obama would do that. And I mentioned that I'm a Democrat. Well, I'm a Democrat because I believe in the basic tenets of the Democratic Party, and I believe in being honest and open with the voters, and I believe in saying what's in my heart and what I think. And I wish all politicians would do the same, although I must be dreaming if I think that's ever going to happen. I do not like the fact, and I see he's changed his mind a little bit about it since yesterday, but I do not like the fact that Obama didn't right out of the gate defend, go to the mat for General Wesley Clark. Because what General Wesley Clark said, there was nothing wrong with it, nothing whatsoever. And I believe Obama should take to the air and articulate what Clark said and drill it into the American public's head. What Clark said was absolutely correct, and there was not one thing wrong with saying it. It's going to be twisted and turned to use to the Republicans' advantage, and there's no need for Barack Obama to step back from Wesley Clark, because Wesley Clark praised McCain's service, honored his service in every way possible, and what he said was absolutely the truth and nothing but the truth. There were many pilots in the Hanoi Hilton who have been shot down and were tortured. Are we going to say that all of them are qualified to be President of the United States? Of course, the answer to that is absolutely not. In no way whatsoever does McCain's POW experience give him the right to say, I was tortured, therefore I'm qualified to be the President of the United States. There's no link between the two. And I believe Wesley Clark was completely justified in saying what he did. He said nothing to dishonor John McCain, nothing whatsoever. He just told the truth. And then Obama kind of halfway throws him under the bus for it yesterday, and today he backed off of it a little bit. You know, if the Republicans want to crow about this, was Abe Lincoln a military hero? And I think most Republicans say that he's the man that they revere the most in their party. How about Ronald Reagan? Next to God in the eyes of most Republicans, was he a war hero? Was he in the military? Did he serve any purpose in the military? Was he? You know, I'm not exactly sure. Was he one of those actor military guys during the Second World War, or did he when he went out and talked to troops and stuff, or was he just did he just play one in the movies? But I talk about being politically correct. They took Clark's statement and ran with it, making it something that it was not. One more time, the right-wing megaphone takes a statement that somebody says and runs off with it and denigrates Wesley Clark, a very fine, upstanding military man himself with a perfectly honorable record. But they denigrate him. They denigrate John Kerry. John Kerry's military service wasn't good enough for them. No. They had to disparage it in every way possible. They had to go after him like they were hungry dogs. And now John McCain calls these people out of the woodwork from the Swift Boat Group to back him up on this and to disparage the good name of General Wesley Clark. Particularly offensive to me in this whole matter is the fact that John McCain himself, during an interview with the National Journal, John McCain was asked if military service inherently makes somebody better equipped to be commander-in-chief, and McCain said, absolutely not. I don't believe that it's necessary. Those are the words of John McCain. Do they not parallel what General Wesley Clark said? Do they not closely parallel what General Wesley Clark said? McCain also said, I believe that military service is the most honorable endeavor an American may undertake, but I've never believed that lack of military service disqualifies one from occupying positions of political leadership or as commander-in-chief. In America, the people are sovereign, and they decide who is and who is not qualified to lead us. John McCain in front of the American Legion. Now, let's be honest here, and I will throw political correctness to the wind when I say this. The only thing John McCain has going for him in front of the public right now, the drum that he has been beating, that his campaign has beaten since we really started this whole thing, is that he's a POW war hero. Okay? As you know, I'm somewhat careful about using the word hero. Very careful about using the word hero. It's their words, not mine. They've used that as the framework for the entire campaign. John McCain would not be a senator in the United States Senate had it not been for the fact that he was a POW military hero. He has run on that to get into the Senate, the House, the Senate, and now he is running on that to gain the presidency of the United States. They have used it and used it and used it. And if you ask most Americans who are intent upon voting for John McCain to occupy the Oval Office and ask them what they know about John McCain, I will bet you a dollar to a donut that 75% of them don't know a damn thing about John McCain's voting record or his so-called Republicanism or his so-called conservatism. What they do know is that John McCain is a war hero and was a POW. And that is what John McCain has counted on to get him into the White House. Now, do I see anything wrong with that? No. If that's what you got, if that's what you brought to the track, that's what you run. You use what you got. But don't be sitting by and saying and being all pious and all when somebody else says, that's not enough. Because it isn't enough. It may show that you have strength of character. And I would remind you that John McCain was a POW. He was treated roughly. He was tortured. And I would remind you also that John McCain gave in to that. Not that any other human being, most other human beings on the face of the earth would not have. I'm just saying, let's tell the whole story, all right? If you're going to use that as the masthead for your campaign, what can you say if someone, and Wesley Clark didn't do anything but say the absolute truth. He didn't say anything that John McCain hasn't said himself. And I am sorely disappointed that yesterday Barack Obama seemed willing to just kind of distance himself from General Wesley Clark. The right-wingers took off with that statement and went crazy over it. And my question is, isn't anyone smart enough to figure out the hypocrisy of their actions when their attack against John Kerry is figured in, the phony outrage of the press and the right-wing talking heads is absurd on its face? And I believe Obama's reaction to this was shameful, proving once again that in the Democratic candidate is ready and willing to be intimidated by the right-wing noise machine. And I'm very disappointed in Barack Obama over this. Wes Clark is, and he was, an outstanding, credible, brave military man. And to abandon him because of his 100% true statement given with no malice whatsoever, no malice toward John McCain, is cowardly of the Obama campaign, and Obama should publicly defend Wesley Clark. And I did hear today that he's backing off of that a little bit, but his initial reaction was to distance himself from General Clark's statements. And now we have the Obama statement on this faith-based initiative, his stance on FISA, and now this. These things have left me shaking my head in disbelief. And I have to wonder if he would have taken any of these stands if he and Hillary Clinton were still locked in a primary battle. I think not. Because Barack Obama knows that his base on the left doesn't stand with him on these faith-based initiatives, nor do they stand with him with his stance on the FISA and the telecom immunity. But now he knows he has the nomination locked up, and now he can start moving toward the center. And now he can be more politically correct. It's the part I hate about politicians. Hate it. I see the market's down today, about 87 points so far. And oil, well, good news. Oil's up another $2. Price at the pump will be up again in the morning, maybe even tonight. Oftentimes they don't wait for the next day. They change it at night. You notice a lot of them got these electronic signs out there now that they can change from the service counter inside. And they must be have their head glued to the market and raise them in a moment's time. Don't know how to lower them, but they sure know how to raise them. What do you have to say about the vice presidential sweepstakes on the Republican, on the Democratic side? I've seen many, many lists. I certainly wouldn't want to bet a lot on who I think is going to get it. I would narrow my field down to a few that I think should get it. And all political squabbling aside from within the Democratic Party, of course, you would expect me, and I will say, you expect me to say, and it's what I will say, that I believe Hillary Clinton would be the best choice. I also believe that Jim Webb would be a good choice. Bill Richardson, no, hell no, and he's on the list. I consider Bill Richardson not to have the honor I once thought he did, the backstabbing he did to the Clintons. And let me say this about Bill Richardson. I know many of you disagree with me. At the start of this entire campaign, I stated there probably was nobody who has ever run on either side that had more qualifications to be president than Bill Richardson. And I still feel that way about Bill Richardson. However, if we're going to measure a man by the strength of his character, and I do, always, then I am still not happy with the fact that Bill Richardson stabbed the Clintons in the back. I will never be happy with that. Therefore, and this is just me talking, therefore I will never, never have the respect for Bill Richardson that I once did. That's me. Joe Biden would make an excellent vice president. I also believe that Sherrod Brown would make an excellent vice president. I believe that Wesley Clark would be an excellent vice president. I've seen names on such as Tom Daschle. My answer to that is no, hell no. Chuck Hagel, no, absolutely not. So I don't know. There are my choices. Hillary Clinton, Jim Webb, Joe Biden, Sherrod Brown, Wesley Clark. It'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. To see what we end up with in the vice presidency. And I wonder how soon you'll make that choice. And there's so much speculation going on right now about Hillary and Bill campaigning with Obama. And are they doing so wondering if this will help Hillary's chances to become vice president? This is my thinking. I believe that when Hillary and Bill, and maybe Barack has not discussed this with Bill, but you can bet he's discussed it with Hillary, and she's related it to Bill. There is an understanding between those two right now. Absolutely. Hillary Clinton knows right now whether or not she's going to be the vice president or not. I believe that those two have discussed this. I believe that Brock has made his feelings known. I believe that Hillary's made her feelings known, and they have an agreement, one way or another, that she will or she will not be the vice president. But I don't believe for one minute that Hillary and Bill Clinton will be out campaigning for Barack Obama, hoping that she will become the vice president. They know right now. It's we that don't know. Barack knows. And there's been an understanding arrived at already that only makes sense to me. Hillary Clinton is not the kind of person that's going to be out pandering and looking over shoulder and saying, gee, I wonder if I'm doing a good enough job campaigning that he might pick me for vice president. No, that's not going to happen. Hillary Clinton will be out campaigning for Barack Obama because Hillary Clinton is a patriotic American that cares about the people and cares about the country and cares about the Democratic Party. Those are the reasons that Hillary Clinton will be out campaigning. I believe she has shown in so many ways that she is a patriot. I believe she's shown in so many ways that she's a woman of the people. I believe that she will fight for the rest of her life to get the proper kind of health care that we need in this country. I believe that you can stake, bet your fortune on that if you have one. I believe she cares. And I believe Barack Obama cares. 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a short break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Thank you.
knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows it's moving fast. Everybody knows that's a naked man and woman, just a shining artifact of the past. And everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. Everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. On top of Calvary, to the beach at Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. Hey, before I move on to something else, I have another comment I wanted to make about this McCain campaign going crazy over Wesley Clark's remark. Asked this morning on his plane or bus, I'm not sure which, the Straight Talk Express, I believe it's on the plane. They were down in Colombia. John McCain's in Colombia trying to get some photo ops done that he's tough on drugs. Gonna continue the war on drugs that's been so successful. Yes, it's been so successful. Oh, yeah. We have local law enforcement here recently making the biggest bust they ever did, so there's lots more than that getting through, as you well know. But anyway, he was asked a question this morning about whether or not, while he was on his plane, about whether or not that his experiences in Vietnam qualified him to be president of the United States, and he gave that typical McCain response to something he doesn't like. You know, he said, "Please." And he just kind of blew off the reporters. And finally he came back and said, "I kind of reacted the way I did because I have a reluctance to talk about my experiences," noting that he has huge admiration for the heroes who served with him in the POW camp and said that the experience taught him to love the U.S. because he missed it so much. And then he went ahead and said, "I'm always reluctant to talk about these things." That has not been my experience listening to the McCain Straight Talk Express and to John McCain over the years. I have that he's reluctant to talk about these things? I don't think so. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program right now, and we hope you do. I did want to talk a little bit about the number one thing on people's minds today. Collectively, we as a nation. And I've got a feeling, and it's not politically correct, since this is the day that I'm showing my disdain for political correctness. And I asked the question, and I've asked the question for several years now, are the best times over for this country? Before I started the program today, I was looking at an analysis of the dollar, the value of the American dollar over the past few years. It ticked up slightly in the first few months of Junior Bush's tenure as President of the United States, and God, how it pains me to say that. But then it has been almost, with the exception of a slight uptick in 2006 and then back down again, the value of the dollar has plummeted over the Bush administration. Plummeted. And we'll probably talk about it a little later in the program today, but I believe that the falling dollar is hugely instrumental in the price of oil right now. It absolutely is. But are the best times over? Do you think they are? Do you think this nation has seen its greatest days? You know, we often see them at the conventions, at the Democratic or the Republican conventions, talking about America's greatest days are ahead and all that. Are they? I don't want to be the eternal pessimist here. But looking at the situation and looking at the history and looking at where we are at the moment, I think the best times are over. Everywhere I look, and I'm sure many of you have similar stories, I see folks who are worried about the future. They're worried in a way and in an intensity that I've not seen in my lifetime. And sure, there was a brief recession during the Carter years that honestly didn't seem like much to the average American except for some anxiety over gasoline shortages and prices. But this is different. This is enormously different. Other than an extreme case now and then, I have never seen many folks lose their homes. Usually, when people were in trouble of losing their home, they're behind on a car payment, usually an extra job, maybe mom could go to work, maybe the husband could work some more hours, some help for some friends and family. They could save a family's home when there was a need to do so, when there were financial difficulties. Losing their home was a very rare event. And now it seems as though there are foreclosures on every block. It certainly seems that way where I live, and I could almost say that that is the truth, that there are foreclosures on almost every block. As much as it pains me to say that, it's true. I know young couples who are losing their home. I know middle-class working couples with young kids who are losing their home. I know of elderly folks who are faced with foreclosure, widows, families with kids with severe medical problems who need specialized care at home, who are being put out into the street. And frankly, I've never seen anything like this. Not a month ago, a man I've known for several years, a good man, a very good man, a hard-working man with a small business, came to me and some others of his friends and told us that he was having to close up his business because he couldn't afford to keep it going any longer. He'd been hunting for other work for months, any work. But because of his age and some physical problems, he couldn't find a job that pays enough for some place to live and the barest of necessities. And this perfectly respectable man is now living in his van, a regular old Chevy van, living in it. He has nowhere else to go but to a homeless shelter, and he's got too much pride to do that. And it makes my blood boil to even think about that. And this gasoline crisis isn't the major cause of it all. It's merely the straw that's breaking the camel's back for most people. The economy was sinking like a stone even before the gas crisis popped up its ugly head. the credit card companies, the banks, the home loan firms. They'd had their way with people for years. And the housing bubble, the loss of value in people's homes, the jobs being shipped overseas by greedy corporatists looking to make the almighty buck at the expense of the working Americans. All of that has led to the breaking of the backs of the middle-class American workers who built this country. And, oh, yes, I know the corporatists like to point to the Rockefellers and the Mellons and the Carnegies and all the industrialists who made massive fortunes during the American Industrial Revolution. But it was the working people, the farmers, the miners, the clerks, the carpenters, the stonemasons, the plumbers, the union workers, the factory workers of this nation that built it into the most powerful and the most envied nation on this planet. It's always been the working men and women of this country who have led the way to prosperity and to its power. And now those people are being kicked to the curb. They've been used up. They've been abandoned. And the nation will be brought to its knees because of this. No nation can be great without the prosperity of the working people. No nation. There's only been one nation who has prospered the way we've prospered. And that's us. And we've done it because of the working men and women of this country and the work ethic in this country. Business and Wall Street and the corporatists made the call and the workers responded. They did their part. Look around the world. Give me one example of a country that's prosperous without the working men and women living well. And as I said, the gasoline problem really is just the last straw. I met a man who worked at a local retail electronics store. He was given a choice. Be laid off or be transferred to another store. Couldn't find another job, so he took the transfer to another store. The store he was transferred to is 25 miles away from his home, 50 miles round trip, as opposed to 4 miles that it used to be. He drives an old pickup truck because that's all he could afford after paying the bills, but he was satisfied with that. But now with a 50-mile-a-day round trip, he wonders how long that vehicle will last because he can't afford to buy another vehicle right now. He took a cut in pay. He can't sell his house and relocate because there are no buyers, and he's upside down in his mortgage anyway because of the real estate market crash. 15 miles round trip. On a good day, 15 miles to the gallon. That's $75 a week for gas. He makes $10 an hour. Takes home about $300 after paying for taxes and his share of his health insurance. That's $225 after the gasoline. His wife works part-time to help, but they have kids to care for, and child care's out of the question. What do they do? What do millions of families like that in this country right now do? They can't live any cheaper than they do. There are no better paying jobs in the area. They can't sell their home. He may be even lucky to have the job he has because the company he works for is in serious trouble. What do we tell people like him? And as I mentioned, the problem is that there are millions of people in similar circumstances in this country right now. People are worried. Their health is suffering. People are suffering from anxiety and from stress. And it's causing physical problems. And as a nation, we have serious problems, and they're not being adequately addressed. And yet you look around, and you read the papers and you watch the financials every day, and you see that the rich are getting far richer. You see that somebody that was head of the Dow Jones, or what was it, New York Stock Exchange, Dow Jones, I don't know which one it was. Forgive me for not knowing that. But had a lawsuit, won it. Elliot Spitzer was fighting him on it. Walked away today with a $185 million bailout. $185 million. And again, we see the rich are getting richer. What did that man do to earn $185 million? We're seeing people live with unimaginable wealth. We've got the new gilded society, people who have no idea what the working class people are experiencing, nor do they care. As long as the multi-millions of dollars keep flowing into their coffers. Executives of companies who ship most of their jobs overseas but still fly the American flag in front of their corporate offices while they send their profits to offshore banks to avoid paying taxes in this country. And the oil industry is making massive profits off of this. That's the reason I've called for nationalizing the oil companies, and some have accused me of being a communist, a socialist, and have called me names I won't repeat here. Well, I do not take it back, and I mean it now more than I did yesterday and the day before. And as one of my loyal listeners said recently, we can have millions of Americans owning the oil companies, or we can have a handful of oil companies owning America. I ask you, which of those two choices do you prefer? Which of those two choices is right? Which of those two choices is ethical and moral for America? I would suggest that any reasonable person would choose the former, that we can have millions of Americans owning the oil companies instead of a handful of executives owning America. To me, there is no other logical choice. And so I do ask, once again, are the best times over? I don't know. I hope not. I certainly hope not. I don't want this country to fall back into the 1930s, the Depression, once again, something like that. Do I believe we may be headed for it? Absolutely, I do. And I'm trying to prepare for it. And I know a lot of people are trying to prepare for it. I'd like to know how you feel about it. You have a lot of hope that the job market's going to improve. I see many experts on Wall Street. It seems that that's mostly what I do lately, is read the financials. I see so many of them say that this jobless report is going to go right on to late 2009 or more. That there's no end in sight yet to this housing collapse. That there may not be any end in sight in the decline of the market. Many people I know who are bulls have decidedly turned into bears lately. I don't know. And yet I see my favorite drug addict today sign a $400 million contract with a nine-figure bonus, they say. That's right. Mr. OxyContin Limbaugh signed a new contract for $400 million. Until the year 2016, I believe. Read an article, big, long article, in the New York Times interviewed him. He's just bought a new $54 million jet airplane. He and his cat live in a 24,000 square foot mansion in Palm Beach. There's nothing wrong with people having wealth. There's not a lot of people that have that kind of wealth. But it does make you wonder when somebody has that kind of riches and that kind of opulence. Obscene riches. When so many people are doing so poorly right now. We have our priorities in this country so screwed up. Just so screwed up. And yet we have those like him and others clamoring for more. And clamoring for positions that will send the working man even lower on the scale than they are now. Begging the U.S. government practically to attack Iran. Goading the administration to attack Iran. God only knows what that will do to the gasoline, the oil market. Should we go to war with Iran? Should the Straits of Hormuz be closed or threatened to be closed, or things be in a bad way in the Straits of Hormuz? Can you imagine what the price of oil will do? Can you imagine what these warmongers are planning? Cheney, in particular. What we're hearing is Cheney. And they want to attack Iran to help our little friends in Israel so that they don't have to do it. The Israelis are doing everything they can to goad the U.S. into doing it. And of course, Cheney wants to do it. Cheney would do it tomorrow. As I've said many times, most likely the most evil man to ever live within the borders of the United States of America, in my opinion. That includes some pretty bad people. That's what I think of Dick Cheney. But no mind whatsoever what that will do to the American economy. Oil's up to $143.57 a barrel right now. It's up $1.84 today. The market is down 143 points right now. NASDAQ is down. Not a good day on the market. We're going to pause for a quick break. We'll be right back.
Has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Side of a northern sea.
military madness. We know what that's all about, don't we? We know a little bit about military madness in this country. And we've learned even more about it here in the past few years. We certainly have. 866-546-5254. Welcome to the Guy James Show here today. I see we've got a good audience today, and I hope you'll decide to participate with us. We were talking a little bit about the economy and how hard it is. So many people normally would go out and buy another car right now. Gas is $4 a gallon, and they're driving a car that gets 15, 16, 18 miles a gallon. They'd go out and buy one of these, you know, a Prius or one of those cars that gets great gas mileage. Guess what? People can't afford to right now. This is different than it was the last time. A lot of people traded in their gas hogs other times when gas has gotten expensive. This time they can't. They can't afford another car. And, of course, some people always do that frivolously. They look at the situation and say, oh, my God, I got to get rid of this car. Then they take a beating on their SUV, lose several thousand dollars on it, not thinking they'd be better off to pay for the gasoline for another year or two than take the beating they take on their car. But so many people can't afford it. And when you drive by the car dealers, at least where I live, and I wonder how it is where you live, it gives you quite a view of exactly what's happening in the auto industry right now. Acres and acres and acres of trucks and SUVs and vans and big cars just sitting there. And they're doing anything they can to push them. They're giving, 6-year loans, 0% interest, huge discounts. I mean, if you could afford a car right now, now's the time to buy one. Of course, you want to buy one of those gas hogs, but now the local luxury car dealers seem to be doing well. Lexus says they're breaking records. Mercedes just built a whopping big new ultra-modern dealership just up the road. But the big three, along with some others, are hitting rock bottom. And I think the news that Chrysler's shutting down its minivan plant is stunning. I mean, I know sales of minivans slowed down like 20% last year or so, but having to close the plant? People just aren't buying cars. They would be buying smaller and more fuel-efficient cars if they had any money. The last time gas went way up, they flocked to the dealers to trade to smaller cars, but not now. There isn't any money. They can't afford to pay the house payments, the credit card bills, the utilities and groceries, and have big car payments too. And like I said, if you can afford a new car, man, now's the time to go buy one. But unfortunately, those people faced with driving this family sedan that gets low gas mileage, you know, they're faced with that or getting a new small car that sips gas. They've got to stick with the old family truckster for now because of the current economy that we're stuck in. And as I mentioned, the job forecasts show that isn't going to change anytime soon. Big question is right now, will we end up having to bail out GM? I see GM is talking about maybe bankruptcy. They need $18 billion. Will there be a government bailout of General Motors? I supported the government bailout of Chrysler way back when, saved a lot of jobs. I haven't studied the situation with GM yet, or is it inevitable that the big three goes down the tubes? GM stock's the lowest it's been in 53 years, and Ford's hemorrhaging money. Even Toyota is down. But think of all those jobs we'll be losing, all the related ones that go along with it, the parts manufacturers, and you know, I think about up in Marysville, Ohio, the Honda plant moved in, and it was good for the community. But all these little industries sprang up around, upholstery plant, and people made these parts and that parts. They farmed out, and it made the whole area successful. And the same goes for General Motors. They have a big, it used to be called Packard Electric. I'm trying to think what it's called now in Warren, Ohio, for example, that made all the wiring harness for the GM cars. That plant is in serious problem, having serious problems, offered buyouts and everything. It's not a pretty situation. So you think of just the plant shutting down. Think of all the consequences of that. The local restaurants, people can't afford to go out and eat anymore. People can't afford to get their cars fixed anymore. They're laying off mechanics. Everybody's laying off everybody. It just goes right down. It's a domino effect. So when you see these closings of these auto plants, don't think just about the auto workers' jobs. There's a lot of jobs in that community around the periphery that those jobs are going to go by the wayside as well. Wherever there's been an auto plant, there's always been a thriving bunch of businesses around it. They've attracted that. I think of the Ford plant that I know of up in Cleveland, Ohio. All sorts of bars and restaurants and little shops and all that, because that's where the action is. Now that those big old plants be abandoned, think of all those small business people that go out of business as well. 866-546-5254. Now see, the market's down. They're having a sell-off going on this afternoon. It's down 155 points at the moment, down to 11,227. Wow. Wonder what gold is today. I've got to look up and see what gold is trading for. It was up to like $935 earlier this morning. It's really coming back up. You know, it dipped about, what, 860 there a month ago after hitting a high of over $1,000. Gold, gold, gold. Where is that on my list here? 946.50. It's climbing. Not a good sign. Not a good sign at all. 946.50 for gold. Wow. Well, it's not a good day of financial reports. We're going to talk about that a little bit more after the program's over with today. And I see we've got a couple of calls coming in now. We're going to break for news at the top of the hour. So if you want to hang on, why go ahead. If not, why give us a call right back after the top of the hour, after we go through the news cycle at the top. And we'll get some more news about unions and so forth. I see Walmart has taken a hit because of some of the things they've done to their employees. We'll talk about that during the news today, I'm sure. Well, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. West Coast dock workers are nearing the deadline to settle a new labor contract. Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union were locked out for 10 days back in 2002. The union represents about 25,000 workers on the West Coast. The old six-year contract expires Tuesday at 5 p.m. Talks are continuing, but details on where things stand aren't being released, either by the union or management. Is offshore drilling for oil in the U.S. going to lower the price you pay for gas at the pump? Not a chance. The Center for Economic and Policy Research says if offshore drilling is opened up, as Republican presidential candidate John McCain wants to do, it will be close to a decade before the first oil can even be extracted from the currently protected offshore sites. The Energy Information Agency says peak production from offshore U.S. sites would be an estimated 200,000 barrels a day in 20 years' time. That's just 0.2% of projected world production, and it's far too small to have any significant impact on prices. Starbucks is closing up nearly 600 shops across the country, a move that would result in the loss of more than 12,000 full and part-time jobs. That size of a cut could amount to 7% of the coffee company's global workforce. Earlier this year, the company had only planned on closing 100 stores. It's also adjusting the number of stores it plans to open in the coming fiscal year down to 200 stores. How many times did Walmart violate Minnesota state labor laws? Jesse Russell has the number.
2 million times. That is how many times Dakota County Judge Robert King Jr. says Walmart violated labor laws by cutting worker break time. The ruling came on Monday as part of a class action lawsuit, and the world's largest retailer has been ordered to pay $6.5 million in damages. For Walmart, that $6.5 million is a drop in the bucket, but a flood could be coming in October. That's when a jury will assign civil penalties and punitive damages to the company. The class action lawsuit covers 56,000 Minnesota Walmart employees who worked for the company between September 1998 and January 2004. Walmart is considering an appeal of the judge's decision.
New York's Department of Labor announced plans on Monday to invest nearly $26 million in the state's workforce. Since 2000, the state has watched federal funding for workers decline from $305 million to a proposed $136 million in the 2009 federal budget. $6.2 million of the state's investment will go toward Advance New York, a program that helps businesses train workers in necessary skills that lead to career growth. You can now get Workers Independent News on your cell phone. It's a free call. Just dial 425-527-7001. That's 425-527-7001 for WIN News on your cell phone. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What will you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You can do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
This was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
God bless America.
your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. Very happy to have all of you along with us. I see we do have a nice size audience today. That's always good to know. Don't like to think I'm sitting here talking to myself. Which I can do, but I prefer not to. 866-546-5252 if you'd like to join the 5254, actually. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us on the program right now. And speaking of telephones, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys, it's Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, from Brooklyn. You know, the American auto industry shot itself in the foot so many times, it's not funny. Because all of this stuff could have been implemented 30 years ago. That we're just starting to talk about.
Oh yeah, I mean they've certainly done lots of damage to themselves. But I thought finally, you know, they're making some great products now and all. Although they've resisted the mileage standards.
It may be just a case of too late.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sad because, you know, in South America they've been doing this for 30 years. GM has been making cars that ran on sugar cane for 30, 40 years in Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah. Yes, they have. I saw that program the other day on CBS, I think it was, and they've been doing it for quite a while.
So, what? You know, I just don't understand. What's the difference? I know lobbying and politics, but...
Well, they got away with it so long for extracting every last buck out of a product that wasn't up to par and making tremendous profits per vehicle. They did that for so long. I think they thought it was going to last forever, and it finally jumped up to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, you know, Tucker was right. You remember?
Yeah. Great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Great movie. I love that movie. That was a good one.
Tucker is so damn right. It's not funny.
Yeah, he was also so far ahead of his time. Been several automakers jumped out way out and in front of their time, but he was certainly one of them. You know, I'm gonna have to watch that movie again. I enjoyed that very much. So glad you brought that up.
It's this maniac Kudlow that you see on MSNBC.
Oh. He's the ultimate bull, isn't he? He's going to talk that market up no matter what. If it gets down to 3,000, he's going to be talking it up. I've never seen anybody quite like him. Of course, he's the quintessential hardcore conservative Republican too.
Oh yeah, well, you know, the tassel loafer martini drinking crowd too.
Yes,
but you see, at least with him, I can understand why.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There is some rationale.
Yes, yes, there is.
It's worked out for him.
Yes, feather thine own nest, and he's done a good job of that, and continues to do so. If that's your goal, and he's done a good job. He's staying in there for the market and for the bulls, no matter what.
But what disturbs me most of all, I don't know if you saw Morning Joe this morning.
No,
it's that I'm starting to agree with Pat Buchanan.
You know what? I found myself doing that several times lately, and that is scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like I'm just going to have a drink to think about.
Yeah, tell me, is it me? Am I crazy, or is he moving to the left, or am I moving to the right?
Next thing you know, you're going to be voting for Obama. Not that there's anything wrong. I feel like I'm in Bizarro World.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my, yeah. I tell you, Pat Buchanan is one of the last people I ever thought would soften his views, but he has considerably lately. I've seen some things.
Well, with the immigration part, he's still hardcore. But as far as keeping jobs here and all that,
yeah,
I think with Pat Buchanan, like, to me, he's your typical mid-American white male, which is, you know, they want their welfare, but only amongst them.
Yeah, absolutely. Welfare is no good unless it pads my pocket.
Just for them and them alone.
That's right. That's right. By the way, as an aside, I heard Pappy Ken talking in an interview not so very long ago, a couple of months ago. He was talking to Christopher Hitchens, and I did want to mention to everybody today, there's an article in Vanity Fair right now done by Christopher Hitchens that you have got to read. It's about waterboarding.
Yeah.
And
you've
got to read this article. It's, you can Google it. It's online. Christopher Hitchens on waterboarding. You'll love the story. You will. Another guy's changed his mind about something. He changed his mind considerably about waterboarding. Anyway, Pat Buchanan reminded me of that. Things in Brooklyn today. Are you having a hot summer day there today, or is it?
Oh no, it's pretty mild today.
Pretty mild.
It's gonna rise up though.
Yeah, well,
it's gonna rise up.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, to me personally, I just think all what's been going on may be the best thing in the long term to ever happen to this country.
Well, I hope we see the light and that there's a silver lining to it someplace, that we wise up and all of a sudden realize that some things that we've had in our heads in the sand about for decades is now coming to fruition, and we better do something.
Personally, even though it's $4 and something a gallon now, we still are underpaying for gas.
Yeah, compared to other countries, that's true.
Yeah. And, you know, you got to mark the inflated dollar, too.
Yes. That's the biggest thing responsible for this. Probably 40% of the price of oil right now is because of the dollar having such a problem.
Gas should not be cheap because, first of all, we've got to find it, refine it, and kill the people who happen to be living on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see, you know.
It costs money to kill those people.
Yeah.
And as everybody well knows by now, we've had to kill how many hundred thousand in Iraq, and that's cost us, I don't know what the bill is right now, $600 billion, something like that. So, yeah, you're right, killing off the people is very expensive. We sound like a couple of radicals talking like that, don't we? Somebody just tune in and don't know what we're talking about.
Like I said, I'm pretty much sheltered from the expense of gas because of my location. And I don't regret for one second, because had I still been living in Florida, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, it's tough if you got to drive anywhere at all. Yeah. And I don't live in a suburban.
Has there been a referendum yet on the statewide railway? Because
They
swept under the rug.
It got swept under the rug, and there's not going to be anything done about it. Of course, it was passed, you know, several years ago, and then the Jebster, when he was still in office, they just did away with it.
Because how many lane highways can they build in the state?
Yeah, well, now that is a problem over on the west coast of Florida. There aren't enough highways. We've got U.S. Route 75, and that's about it. Interstate 75, and that's why we've got such a problem on it. They're changing it to six lanes there now, coming down through this particular area.
There's no reason why there shouldn't be a railway that connects.
That's right.
Jacksonville to Miami.
That's right.
And gets you there in 2 hours.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. Every
along the I-4, that will connect you from Daytona Beach to Tampa.
Yeah, and one running the other way, too, from Pensacola across, you know, all the way across to Jacksonville to New Orleans. I mean, we've got
a lot of the tracks are already there.
That's right. That's right. Down the East Coast, Mr. Flagler made sure of that.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you today.
No problem.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye.
Let's see, where's the market down now? 166 points down today. Well, that's it. It's closed. It's 4 o'clock, so that's what's going to stay. The market, 11215, where it closed today, and oil closed at 143.57, which is a new record. We're constantly in record territory. And, you know, we're seeing the bottom drop out of this market right now. And to my way of thinking, it's pretty damn difficult to see anything positive for quite a while on Wall Street. And I really believe that the financial markets are stressed out for several reasons, and it's going to be almost impossible for these talkers to manipulate them back onto solid ground again. And Bernanke been trying, him and the feds, but I think their hands are tied, and if they lower interest rates anymore, and they know this, and that's why I think that's why they didn't lower them anymore in this most recent meeting. If they did, they're going to be flirting with going into some sort of a drastic inflationary tailspin that we can't pull out of. And if they raise the interest rates and cut off credit lines, they're going to set up an even deeper recession than we're in now, or possibly even worse. So the sad thing about this is the political options are almost slim and none at the moment. The Bush economic policy failures have put us here, and are getting out of this isn't going to be easy. And to my way of thinking, the options are really limited. And the reason our options are so limited is because of oil, and more oil. Oil is the problem, and we don't have a solution to the problem at the moment. And the reason it's a problem is that our national interest and the national interest of a small group of oil-producing countries aren't the same. We used to be the top-producing oil country in the world. And as you all know, that's just not the way it is anymore. And we've become a country that doesn't produce much of anything anymore. And our big problem is, I think, that those in power, those people guiding the ship, have decided that it's easier to make money and enrich themselves by sitting at their desk and transferring money from one place to another rather than make a product. And that hasn't been the American way all these years. Just keep shuffling money, and the old money shuffle has been where it's at over the last few years up on Wall Street and in the financial institutions here in this country. And there's plenty of it. And if it runs low, they'll just call the administration, and the people in charge will call the good folks down at the U.S. Bureau of Printing and Engraving and have them work a little overtime and print some more. And that's been working out real well for the folks shuffling the money. But if you're getting a paycheck, if you got a savings account or a retirement account or money stuffed in your mattress, all of a sudden your money is not worth squat anymore, and it's becoming worth less and less and less. And well, that method is good for something else, really. It allows these money shufflers to cash out their stock options and drive off with a full-size semi-tractor trailer stuffed with cash before you even realize that your retirement and your savings become lately just a pittance of what it was. And I think this method also allows some sort of a rogue administration like Bush's to start a war and borrow all the money for running it, which is exactly what they've done, and supposedly conquer the natural resources of the offending country, namely the oil. And like Eric said just a few minutes ago, of course we got to kill the people that are sitting on top of the oil. Now the folks that we're conquering, on the other hand, and even some we haven't conquered yet because our leaders have been so close with them, so close that they kiss each other on the cheek and hold hands. You know, the folks like Prince Bandar and his close friends with the Bushes. The ones that just happen to have oceans of black gold running underneath their sovereign nations. These folks are getting a little antsy about taking this ever-declining paper money of ours in payment for their oil. And this causes a problem. And sure, they're still making money, but not as much as they could if they could get paid in non-inflationary money like American greenbacks right now. And all of this leads me to believe, and I absolutely, positively believe this, that we will not see an end to our military expeditions around the world in areas that just happen to possess oil. And I don't care if it's Democrat, I don't care if it's Republicans in the White House, I believe the present tactics we're using will continue. And when you stop and think about this, you look at the United States Congress right now, I don't see any great outcry from most of the Democrats to end this war. Most of them understand that the And this is the problem with Washington. The establishment requires that we continue on with our stealing the resources of the smaller and the less powerful countries, and it will not stop. As long as we need those resources, we will go and get them militarily, one way or another, I don't care which party's in power, because of the establishment. And oh sure, the people will call for an ending, but when gas gets to be even more expensive, they'll be coerced into going along with our thievery so we can continue to drive our cars in the same manner we've come to expect. And that's where the problem is, isn't it? That's the American way. The war was the big election issue until the economy and oil start eating away at our billfolds, and then the economy jumped to the top of our list of concerns. So the American people will be coerced into following the establishment on this because of their billfold and their standard of living. There will always be another reason to attack another country. Anyone who's followed this current set of events knows damn well that we're not in Iraq for any reason other than oil. It never was anything else. They had the Niger forgeries, the anthrax scares, the WMDs that didn't exist. Anytime we need an excuse, we will manufacture one. Why? Stop and think about it. And I was thinking about it today. Someone might even suggest taking a drone reconnaissance plane and painting it in the colors of the United Nations so that some bad guy regime will take a shot at it and then we'll be allowed to attack him. The Bushes were actually dreaming about doing that. I guess my point here, and I wonder if you agree with me, I wonder if many of us have rose-colored glasses on pertaining to the change of administrations from Republican to Democrat. My point here, at this particular juncture in time, because of our lack of resources, and let's cut the crap, I do mean our lack of resources. Drill isn't going to do the job. It will not do the job. I'm sure many of you have heard the plethora of so-called experts, the same ones I've heard over the past month or so, talking about drill. And any thinking person knows that drilling isn't going to do a damn thing for the price of oil right now. And if we do find some oil a decade and are able to produce it and sell it a decade from now, the demand will have grown by that much. So we are not going to drill our way to oil independence, period. I pity anybody that's dumb enough to believe otherwise. But I guess the whole point here is that just because we put a new administration in office doesn't necessarily mean we'll be able to drop our guard and trust them to do the right thing. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party have many, many, many differences, but politicians do not. Lying, cheating, and stealing, and going against the will of the people are nonpartisan actions. Never forget that. That's why we have to be more vigilant than we've ever had to be, no matter which party gets into office. I think we have a tendency to relax when our party gets into power, and then they get to running wild sometimes. That's a problem. That's a real problem. Had a little clip I wanted to play. You've heard John McCain being questioned this morning about the economy, since we've been talking about the economy and his famous saying that he said he didn't know much about economy. Well, he got quizzed about that this morning on one of the morning shows again.
You have admitted that you're not exactly an expert when it comes to the economy, and many have said that
I have not.
But I can't come down yet and give you a specific solution because I don't claim to be smart enough.
Has Ben Bernanke cut rates aggressively enough?
I don't have that kind of expertise to know exactly whether he has cut interest rates sufficiently or not.
Now, I am not
an expert on Wall Street. I'm not an expert on some of the stuff.
Senator McCain, you have said repeatedly, quote, I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated. Is it a problem for your campaign that the economy is now the most important issue, one that, by your own acknowledgement, you are not well-versed on?
Actually, I don't know where you got that quote from. I'm very well-versed in economics.
Well, I know where you got the quote from. I know where you got the
I will
quote
show
from.
You where I got the quote from. I got it from John McCain, and here it is. McCain is refreshingly blunt when he tells me, quote, I'm going to be honest. I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated.
You have admitted that you're not exactly an expert when it comes to the economy, and many have said that
I have not.
The girls here are stars, you are the northern lights. They try to shine in through your curtain, you're too close and too bright. They try and they try, but everything that they do is the ghost of a trace of a pale imitation of you. I'll be the one to drive you back home. This party was made with the night air and the chance to smile. We'll wipe its way from your face to one of the boys in your line. Well, you act like you're hip to their tricks and you're strong, but a virgin. Words are hard, never once had a song. I'll be the one to drive you back home, Kathleen. And I'll have you back by break of day. I'm going your way anyway. And if you'd like to come along, I'll be yours for a song. Oh, oh, oh.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us. Hey, how many of you got those stimulus checks and so forth and have paid bills with them or saved them or bought and gone out and, as everybody said, gone out and bought a big screen TV with them? Or that's the one you heard the most often. Yeah, they're just going to take those and go out and buy those big screen TVs. I don't have one of those. Not saying I wouldn't like to have one necessarily, but I don't have one. Don't see that in the future anytime soon. Anyway, they were sent out to stimulate the economy, and as we know, it really hasn't worked. And it's one of those things that all the politicians, as I said, the establishment, jumped on and said, well, let's send some money out to those poor folks out there that paid the taxes, and maybe they'll be happy. Well, they're still not happy, and it didn't do a whole lot to stimulate the economy, and it didn't do a whole hell of a lot to help anybody. I'm sure it saved a few people from starving this month, but not too much. But when Bush, and I found this story, when Bush announced his economic stimulus in January, he bragged that the package was the right size and would boost the economy. And a lot of politicians, I don't want to limit that to Bush, a lot of politicians promised that. And he said, and let me quote Junior Bush, he said, I'm pleased that this agreement meets the criterion that I set forth last week to provide an effective, robust, and temporary set of incentives that will boost our economy and encourage job creation. This package has the right set of policies and is the right size. The incentives in this package will lead to higher consumer spending and increased business investment this year. Well, as for business investments this year, that's a joke. But I'm happy to report that the economic stimulus that the politicians gave us has really done something for one of the industries in this country. That's right. The porn industry has profited immensely over this. This is according to a press release from the Adult Internet Market Research Company. An independent market research firm, the Adult Internet Market Research Company, has discovered that many websites focused on adult or erotic materials have experienced an upswing in sales in the recent weeks since the checks have appeared in millions of Americans' mailboxes across the country. According to Kirk Mishkin, head research consultant for that group, many of the sites we surveyed have reported a 20 to 30% growth in membership rates since mid-May when the checks were first sent out, and typically the summer is a slow period for this market. And so they did a survey to their members, of the people that sign up for porn sites, and it says 32% of respondents referenced the recent stimulus package as part of their decision to either become a new member or renew an existing membership. So, ironically, the porn industry is now thanking Bush for his policies, and the other politicians as well. I don't want to make him the... getting more people to buy porn was probably the last thing Bush had on his mind when he came up with his stimulus package, but we'll take it, said one of the leaders of that group. Well, so you see, it did work, and the people in the porn industry have profited off of that. I think a lot of people thought they might be going for washing machines instead of going for porno sites. Mm-hmm. Hey, I didn't write the story. That's what it said. All right. I did want to mention before I got off completely off this economy thing today that this whole thing with the nosedive of this economy right now, this is hearkening back to many folks, many older folks, people in their 80s right now, a couple that I've spoken to, that are reminding them of another time. Another not-so-good time in, like, 1929, 1930, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right in through there. And I know we talk about it, maybe incessantly, to some of your minds, but it's not funny. and it's a serious situation. And sooner or later, it's gonna come. That dog's gonna come barking at the door of almost everybody that isn't wealthy. And we are looking at a situation when there are going to be more banks that are going to collapse. And this may well set off a chain of events that the Fed was trying to head off when they bailed out to help bail out Bear Stearns. But even they, the Fed, have realized now that they can't keep handing out money that they don't have. And so the financial industry is, that sector is looking extremely bad. And if this thing gets legs, we could be looking at a far worse situation than we had back in the 30s. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I will use a McCain quote. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. I'm certainly not, but I'm encouraging everybody to trim the fat and get ready, because I think we're in for some hard times. I do. I know a lot of people say, oh, now, come on, you're being, well, here we had oil closing at an all-time high again today. There doesn't seem to be any end in sight of that. And you know it'll go higher because of the saber rattling we're doing, and the saber rattling that Israel is doing at the moment with the nation of Iran. But you know, as our previous caller mentioned, earlier caller mentioned, we're not alone in this. The rest of the world is paying, not the rest of the world, but many other countries in the world are paying far higher gas prices than we are. And food prices as well. I mean, you go over to Europe, for example, and look around the truckers and the taxi drivers and the farmers and the fishermen all across the continent. They're blocking roads, having blockades, and they're raising holy hell over this. And gas and diesel prices are sometimes 2.5-3 times more than they are here in North America. And as hard as it is for us to listen to, prices are still a bargain here compared to a lot of the rest of the developed world. But as we've mentioned before, a lot of that is taxes over there. Not that the price of oil is any higher there, but a lot of it's taxes, and they seem to be getting a lot more for their taxes than we get in the way of education for their youngsters and health care. So that is something to always keep in mind when they're talking about people paying exorbitant prices for oil and petroleum products in Europe, yes. But in many of those countries, they're getting a whole lot more bang for the buck. Or at least they're getting health care out of it. At least they're getting educational benefits out of it. But politicians are you know, they're acting like they can do a whole lot about some of these high energy prices and food prices, and we've heard about the speculators and the Arabs all being the, they're being the bad guys right now. And we've had oil go from $40 a barrel up to $143 a barrel today. But the main culprit in this whole thing, and yes, I know about the speculators and all that, but the main culprit in all this is the once strong American dollar. And most of this oil surge has been caused by the U.S. dollar's continued loss of value, and that has been caused by the bungling of this Bush crazy foreign policy and this complete orgy of death of debt that we've had in this country over the past couple of decades. And of course, I recognize that China and India and some of the other Asian nations are pumping up their demand. But you also have to keep in mind that in China and India, which import most of their oil, their prices there are 30 to 40% cheaper than they are here in North America. So it isn't all just demand from those people. And we have the situation where the invasion of Iraq was about grabbing oil. And that was the aim all along, and they were going to boost production, they said. And it was a disaster. And I don't know how many people realize this right now, but we've got some 14,000 mercenaries, 14,000 hired guns guarding the Iraq pipeline, and its oil production is actually lower than it was before the U.S. invasion. And that's adding to what's going to be a supply shortage on the world market. So it isn't a pretty situation. But as I mentioned earlier on, the problem here in America is our leading industry used to be manufacturing, and that's shrunk to only 12% of our GDP. 12%. And the debt has grown from $10.5 trillion in 1987 to $43 trillion now. And, of course, we had this massive housing bubble. And really low interest rates for a long time. And the housing bubble was good for about 40% of our GDP. And so now we've got this recession. We've got a collapse of Wall Street, their house of cards, all this house of cards falling down right now. But the dollar is really sinking us. And two-thirds of the world's hard currency reserves are now held in Asia. China and Japan hold 47% of the U.S. foreign debt. And the bigger that gets, the more the U.S. dollar weakens, and the more problems we're going to have. And I don't see any end in sight to it. Hey, I'm going to take a break right now. We're suffering from a tremendous cold here today. And we'll take a short break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Tears aloud. there's still time. My one last wish, someday you'll see how hard I try and how much you meant to me. It's your world now. Use well your time. Be part of something good. Leave something good behind. The curtain falls. I take my bow. That's how it's meant to be. It's your world now. It's your world now.
Ah, the Eagles, after all these years, still sound so damn good. I love the Eagles, always did. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We hope you'll give us a call. You got plenty of time to do so. 866-546-5254. We've kind of been talking mostly about the economy today. And I live in an area where the economy right now is not good, and particularly talking about the real estate market. I was just looking at a story from CNN talking about the neighborhood not 3 or 4 miles from where I'm sitting right now. And it says, rock-bottom home prices have finally begun to lure venture real estate investors in the fray. Sharon Restropo, a broker in South Florida, where home prices have dropped nearly 27% over the 12 months, ouch, recently bought a three-family home in Cape Coral. That's a right next door to Fort Myers, from a very motivated seller for a mere $65,000. This is a three-family home. It listed for $195,000. I have to admit, I didn't know that you could buy a three-family home from the most motivated seller there is for $65,000. Anyway, she can rent out the three apartments for about $1,500 and turn a profit while she holds on to the property until the market recovers. She said the savvy investors here are buying up everything they can. Well, I don't know about that. I haven't seen anybody buying up too much property, but I know that one right there is news to me. And there are places where there are many homes for sale and foreclosure that people are buying them in bulk even. This Restropo woman that I was talking about here, the Florida broker, she's doing individual sales. She's sitting out the bulk purchases for right now. But she was recently given the chance to broker a liquidation sale of 32 new homes in North Cape Coral, priced from $122,000 to $127,000, down from $195,000, but she's not interested. She said, they're not cheap enough for my guys or me, she said. Wow. I will tell you that in this past Sunday's paper, a large developer here in this area, and this is not uncommon in South Florida, had a full-page ad in with some homes priced, new unoccupied homes, never been occupied, brand new homes, that some of them were down to 50%. A few of them were down to 50% of their original asking price, which shows that they were getting pretty greedy to start out with. But imagine that, brand new, never lived in homes, down to 50% of the original asking price. And still, they've got some for sale. That's just as something that we thought in this area and many areas of the country that only just a few years ago was completely unimaginable. And imagine how many folks you know and I know that were counting on their homes to kind of be their piggy bank for their retirement. Not anymore. The old piggy bank went completely empty. There are people having to sell homes now for what they paid for them 10, 15, 20 years ago. So the rise in property values, the ownership society that we wished on everybody, and we wanted everybody to own a home. Everybody wants to own a home. It's, in many cases, turned out to be an ugly thing for a lot of people. Yes. 866-546-5254. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I had a clip here someplace that I wanted to play, and I forgot. I don't know. I don't know what happened to it. Oh, well. Anyway, we'll play a little song for Ann Coulter here just for a minute. This is by John Butler.
Make my little soldier stand attention when I see your equine features on my bedroom TV. Hay and Coulter, they say that you're a poulter, geist or a banshee or a witch. I think you're just the perfect creature to help this cracker scratch his itch. While you're flogging the liberals and calling them faggots, I'm flogging the dummy, I really smack it for you. Hey, and I know you want it too. And while I'm flogging, there's a movie in my noggin starring me and you and some other dame, in combinations for which not even Hindus have a name. And colder, if I could be less older, richer, more handsome, with more class, bet I could get you to my mansion. Bet I could, well, you know, but don't even tell me you ain't into that. Oh, I am. I love you, and I defend you all the time. When people say you're mean, I say that's just showmanship, the way a dominatrix uses a whip. Oh, and I think you're beautiful, you willowy thoroughbred uber goddess. When they say you look horsey, it gives me conniptions. I say cultish is a better description. Shoulders, your sunken cheeks and dishwater mane. I say it makes you look exotic. They say it makes you look insane. But they're just jealous, cause lots and lots of fellas have fallen happy victims to your charms. Those radio callers who wear swastikas on their arms. Oh, I'd be ecstatic, my beautiful Annie, if you'd meet me in the paddock. Give me puddin' and me tonight. I'd ride you till the morning light. I can't believe anyone could be so silly to suggest that you're a fella, not really a filly. I'm sure that's not true. At least 65% sure.
Little tune there for Annie the Manny Coulter. Love that gal. And as you heard me talk a little earlier, if you didn't hear it today, Rush Drug Junkie Limbaugh signed a new $400 million contract today. Wow. Had to hit the old sneeze button there for a minute. Got myself a good cold this afternoon somehow. I don't know why. Anyway, we only got a couple of minutes to go. I think I can make it, get out some hot tea and all that sort of thing, and maybe it'll go away by tomorrow. I hope so. Somebody writes on the chat room, Jersey, shame on you. No, really, I don't mean shame on you. That's cool. Jersey called Ann Coulter a walking floor mop. I could not have come up with a better description than that, I don't think. I'm pretty sure I could never have come up with a better one than that. A walking floor mop. That's good. I like that. I like that. Well, you have been listening to the Guy James Show here today. Hope it didn't depress you too much by giving you a lot of financial information today about the economy, but it's stuff we all need to know, stuff we need to be advised of and be ready for, and if it's coming, why, we need to get ready for it one way or another. So thanks for listening today. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director, and we'll join you again tomorrow. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.